from two guys whose numbers would be better if they weren't pitching to the score. It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
It's At the Letters on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we're going to talk about all things Toronto Blue Jays. We'll talk about struggling rotation, when Daniel Norris might rejoin it. We'll talk about the health of the ball club. Maestro Stirrus, Jose Bautista, Michael Saunders, Jose Reyes. So many guys walking wounded. We'll talk about all of them. And we will also talk to Mike Wilner, host of Jays Talk, about what it's like to host that little program and talk to people moments after an emotional win or loss. All of that and more coming up on At the Letters. It's At the Letters on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes for Tuesday, May the 19th in the beautiful city of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am joined, as always, by Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, how are you?
Good, man. Good to be talking some Blue Jays, although they're not doing too well right now.
They're not. I mean to be so aggressive off the top. I think that just the Blue Jays hate, just being immersed in this world of covering this team and a lot of what you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, people are outraged right now.
Yeah, they're not very happy at all. And I'd say with good reason. I mean, the pitching staff has been pretty bad. That's not to say that it won't get better, because I think it will get better from here, but it has not been good. They have the worst ERA in the American League right now.
You can't do that. The starting pitching has to be better. Like absolutely, like dramatically, I would say better. We're talking like two runs better as a unit. And we saw that in Houston this weekend, where the team went and got swept, which is, I mean, a four-game sweep is, even in today's baseball world, you look at some of the games last night across the major leagues, how many 1-1 scores there were. In this baseball world, a four-game sweep is tough.
Yeah, and it's against a team that is playing very well right now, but historically, the last few years, they've been really bad. So that hurts a little bit more. You don't think about the Astros as a team that has the capability to sweep you in four games.
We saw the Blue Jays actually rough up Dallas Keuchel a little bit, get to him for a few runs. But then when that happened, R.A. Dickey also gave up a lot of runs. We saw the Blue Jays unable to score off of McHugh the other day, unable to really get to Feldman in the last two games. And when they didn't do that, the bats let them down. I mean, it seems like when the Blue Jays get a good offensive performance, they get a bad start. Or the Blue Jays get a good start and the bullpen kind of lets them down. It's kind of just been an unfortunate kind of confluence of events, in that when one thing looks good, the other not so much. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's definitely what happened in the course of that five-game losing streak. And at the same time, offensively, for the most part, they've been great. I mean, you look at this offense, most runs in baseball, even the role players. And going into this season, to be fair, I didn't anticipate that their bench would be as good as it has been. But you've had guys like Kevin Pillar, Chris Colabello. They've stepped up. Danny Valencia has been very good. So you have guys who are contributing offensively. I think there's a real depth to the offense that I didn't even expect. But at the same time, the pitching just hasn't been there. So I think you look at the overall output, and you're going to have some ugly losing streaks if you only have one starter in the rotation who has an ERA that's, you know, even under 4.5, let alone league average.
And I mean, what we say as, you know, sane, sensible, logical, reasonable people is that the pitching must get better. Look at what some of these pitchers have done in their careers. R.A. Dickey, Mark Burley, year over year over year of quality starts, of good pitching, of reliable, consistent results. So you would assume that would come back. Drew Hutchison, a guy who has flashed all kinds of potential, you know, has pitched deep into ball games last year, wicked slider, great fastball, nice mix, you know, strikeout guy, ground balls, fly balls, just any way you can get outs. Drew Hutchison looking good in the past, this year not so much. But at what point do you say, like, look, we're into almost the end of May now and it hasn't happened? Why is it going to happen?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And you can get caught in the trap of waiting and waiting and hoping, and then it just never happens. So that's the determination the Blue Jays have to make right now, is is a turnaround coming? And I mean, you can look at last year's Orioles as maybe a best case scenario for this Blue Jays team. Obviously, Baltimore won the AL East in 2014. And, you know, if you looked at what Chris Tillman's numbers were at this point last year, I'll look them up now, but they were not very good.
Right.
And then he kind of reverted to his career norms and he ended up doing really well as the season progressed. So that's kind of what the Blue Jays need from guys like Burley, who has shown progress his last three outings or so. They need these guys to get back to their norms in a hurry. But to answer your question, I don't know if that's going to happen for them. And I don't think that the Blue Jays know that that's going to happen either.
How frustrating is that to look at last year's Orioles and look at them throwing out, you know, Chris Tillman, Miguel Gonzalez, Wei-Yin Shen, like pitchers who, you know, you would think would not be to the level of a Burley, Dickey, Hutchison, Sanchez, Norris, and yeah. Yet watching them getting the results off those guys that the Blue Jays have not.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, you look at Tillman last year, so through this time, end of May, his ERA was 4.97. And then, let's see, from May 31st on, he was way better, basically an all-star pitcher. He had a 2.63 ERA, 144 innings. And that's backed up by the peripherals as well. So that's the kind of turnaround that they need from the Burleys, the Dickies, Drew Hutchison. And basically, they're going to have to explore the trade market at the same time, even if it's not going to pick up for another few weeks. But to me, there's no question in my mind, this is a club that must explore the trade market for starting pitching. It doesn't mean you get Johnny Cueto or you give up the farm for the absolute ace of the pitching market, whoever that happens to be, Cole Hamels, whoever. But you've got to look around. Maybe you can find this year's Brandon McCarthy out there, someone you can get at a discount who can come in and provide some innings.
I tend to agree with you. I think that Alex Anthopoulos would like to make a move for pitching. I don't know if he can right now. I just don't think that there's a market out there for it at the moment. But I think that, you know, you're not looking at a situation where there's a guy in Buffalo who's begging for an opportunity. I mean, I guess that guy would be like Randy Wolf, right? I mean, and it's not a great proposition. Wolf's been great. He's been incredible. You know, but he's stranding runners at a ridiculous rate. If you kind of look at some of the peripherals, he's let off, like, leadoff hitters are batting great against him. He's putting guys on base and working his way out of jams. It's not really a fun way to live life. And in the majors, that's going to get exposed, I feel. But, you know, if you're the Blue Jays, you're not looking at somebody who's like really, really begging for a chance in this rotation. Maybe Daniel Norris, who already had his chance and is kind of trying to work back right now. I think that the way to supplement this rotation would be through trade.
Yeah. And even in that scenario where you go out and add someone, it's great to have a guy in Randy Wolf who has a 1.1 ERA at AAA. It's great to have Daniel Norris, a top prospect, who I'm sure will get chances as the season progresses. But I think you make a great point on Randy Wolf. You can't let the ERA disguise the overall of what's going on. And overall, he's been doing pretty well, but he isn't necessarily the best pitcher in the International League just because he has that mark. I mean, you look at the hits allowed, one hit allowed per inning. You look at the strikeout to walk, he's striking out 1.5 times as many guys as he walks. This is not a dominant performance if you look at the peripherals. And I think that tells you Wolf can be serviceable, but he's not going to be the answer to a team that really needs some big time resolution on that pitching staff.
38-year-old washed-up veteran. I mean, no disrespect to Randy Wolf, who had a great career, a fine career, but, you know, 38-year-old guy who couldn't get a team to look at him this spring. I mean, if that's what you're banking on, I God help you.
Yeah, right? And great story. Yeah. It would be a lot of fun to watch him at the big league level. I mean,
I'll write the hell out of that story when he comes up.
Oh, exactly. I mean, it's a really great story. It would be fun to watch him, but I don't think you want to bank on him. And that's just part of the reason why, you know, same with Estrada, Todd Redmond, these guys are filling in capably. You know, Redmond, first time through the order, is a guy who can give you a few innings here and there. But realistically, if you want to compete with the best teams in the American League, if you consider yourself a playoff team, you want to have some consistency, some dependability at the top of that rotation.
What would be nice would be if Daniel Norris would figure his stuff out. He's been okay since he's gone down. He's made 3 starts for Buffalo so far. He's walked 3 batters in each of them, but he has not allowed more than 2 runs in any of them. He's slowly been progressing. His first start, he only went 5 2/3. Second start, 6 1/3. Third start, 6. You'd like to see him getting into the seventh. You'd like to see him getting out of the seventh, going a bit later, you know, maybe using 100 pitches over 7 innings instead of over 6. I think that's the thing with him. And the thing that he seems to get away from a lot of the time is the fastball. And he starts just kind of junk balling, for lack of a better word, throwing breaking stuff, throwing his off speed, relying on that instead of going to that 93, 94 mile an hour fastball.
I haven't seen the AAA starts, but when he was at the big league level, I thought his off speed stuff was great. Like, yeah. I thought, you know, especially considering he's a guy who just turned 22 and he has the confidence in his stuff to throw it basically in any count. I was really impressed with, you know, the changeup, the slider in particular. And for me, it's a really good point when you say that he's got to pitch deeper into games, keep his pitch count under control. But I don't know exactly when he's going to end up back up here.
No, nobody does. And I think the Blue Jays are looking for something specific from him, you know, and that could mean a lot of things. It could be mentally as much as physically. You know, you talk about he was a guy he didn't, you know, who when he was up here was not controlling his emotions well on the mound, was, you know, getting overly excited, was getting too amped up, you'd say. And then, you know, this is something I've talked to Aaron Sanchez about a lot this year, is also trying to walk that fine line between being too relaxed and too excited, because you want to go out there with a bit of fire and a bit of passion and a bit of swagger. And you know, you want to be that guy on the mound, but also you don't want to be like hyperventilating.
Yeah. You can't be Yordano Ventura version Toronto. Not going to do anyone any favors.
That would satisfy some of the fans though, if that guy was here and you know.
Yeah.
Right. That's what people want. That's, you listen to these people who are like, yeah, we want more fire. We want more passion. You know, we want some, get that guy in here. Get him thrown at people's heads.
And there's no doubt that Sanchez cares a ton and Norris cares a ton. But like you say, it's channeling that. And with both these guys, it comes down to commanding the zone, something that I think if Norris, you know, goes out there, really shows some good command, throws a lot of strikes, pitches deep into a game, I wouldn't be surprised if he's up here within a start or two.
Yeah. And I mean, the Blue Jays backed off their starters. They threw in Todd Redmond yesterday, and you know, he was all right. He wasn't bad. He was Todd Redmond. So, you know, they backed everyone back a bit, and that's something that you'll do when you're facing, you know, 20 games in a row. It's the baseball season is a grueling thing, you know, especially if what some of these starters have been through, maybe not such a bad move. I do wonder what it'll mean kind of at the end of the turn, though, whether is Marco Estrada going to make his next start?
That's the plan. So I would think Estrada starts, and I think even Redmond, too, is kind of that ideal spot starter in that, you know, if the time comes and you do have to expose him to waivers again, that's something the Blue Jays could do without worrying too much. I mean, they did the same thing with Redmond earlier in the season. They exposed Jeff Francis to waivers. I mean, they've shown with some of these long guys, you get them up, you get some innings out of them, and then if you have to make a move, then you're prepared to do that.
Just churning them through the meat grinder, eh? Just
hey, Blue Jays baseball, one roster move every couple of days, it seems like.
Seriously. And poor Jeff Francis, too, who pitched so well for this team in just situations where there was no leverage whatsoever and finally gets his opportunity in a high leverage situation and immediately gives up a pair of hits. And it's not good to be a veteran out of options kind of long man guy for the Toronto Blue Jays right now.
No, it's definitely not, because you know you're going to get opportunities. I guess that's the one thing that you could say about that role. But they've gone through a lot of them. It comes down to that bullpen depth that entering the season was going to be a question for them. They've had some pleasant surprises. I mean, Roberto Osuna's making an all-star bid. It's really unbelievable what he's doing. But at the same time, they have had some disappointments.
It's fair to say that Roberto Osuna has been the best pitcher on the Blue Jays this year.
He's been incredible. Yeah. I mean, setting aside the age, let's just, you know, regardless of what age he is, it's really been incredible. More than a strikeout per inning. They're going to him a ton, too. You look at the kind of pace he's on. He's a guy who could end up pitching, I don't know, 70 innings, 75 innings in the course of his rookie season, a season in which he is the youngest player in Major League Baseball. It's really impressive.
I asked John Gibbons about that in Baltimore, and he kind of brushed it off, and he was just kind of like, oh, you know, we'll manage it a bit. But like, he is this year's kind of Aaron Loop. Like, he is the guy that they're just crushing with innings. He's thrown 21 innings so far. The next closest pitcher who is not a starter would be Liam Hendricks, who's thrown 17 and a third. So he's thrown three and two thirds less innings than Osuna. That's a long guy, too.
Yeah.
Like, and Roberto Osuna is being used a lot. Too much? I don't know.
Yes. No question. I mean, and that's not to say that he has been used too much, because I think that they've managed to get him days off. The Blue Jays, if you look at it, are one of the best teams in baseball at not going to guys on back-to-back days. John Gibbons does not do that unless he absolutely has to. That's all to his credit. So far, I think it's fine. But if you keep going to him at this rate, you're on a pace to use him. So 21, we're at the quarter pole as we record this. Mm-hmm. That's 85 innings, essentially. You can't, I mean, you can. I don't know that you want to use Asuna 85 innings when he's coming off Tommy John and so inexperienced. His career high in innings pitched at the minor league level is, I believe, 43. So in my opinion, you don't want him to pitch 85 innings this year. But if you get to 65,
70,
maybe 70, you ease up a little as the season goes on, find ways to get him some rest. I think that's totally fine.
Because if 70 is like the high end of our scale here, that would give him 49 more innings.
Right.
And we've got 122 games to go or something like that.
Right. And so this is a guy who last year pitched in the fall league and he pitched a total of 23 innings in the pros. His career high was 43. So I think you want to be relatively careful. I don't know that you want him to lead the league in relief innings, but if he ends up being a go-to guy, that's great. It says he was healthy and they still need to just, you know, keep an eye on his workload, make sure that they're being reasonable.
I guess the point I'd be trying to make is that if he only has 49 innings left to go on the high end of our scale of where we'd want him to be, and the Blue Jays have over 120 games, like, you got to start being careful. You know what I mean? And pick, like, because you're going to want this guy in September.
Yeah.
Ideally, you have to get to relevancy in September 1st before you can even think about that. But you do want to, you know what I mean? Like, he's just been used a lot.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think he's been overused?
Well, I think that John Gibbons has had no other options.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Because I think that everyone else has been such a flaming comet of garbage that there just hasn't been any other option than to go to the one guy who's reliable. And what do you know? It's the 20-year-old who, you know, was in single A last year.
Yeah. His first week in the big leagues, they went to him on back-to-back days twice. And since then, he's been gone to on back-to-back days just once. So they are being careful. And I think they wanted to test him out, see what they had. But I think the fact that they're not going to him back-to-backs, they're not going to him 3 out of 4 days, that says that's probably the direction this thing is headed.
The direction the Blue Jays are headed, hopefully, would be getting some of their walking wounded back. We can kind of go through the list here. Jair Navarro was coming back from a hamstring strain, suffered a bit of a setback, and all has been quiet on that front. Meiser Asturias is alive. If you had asked me last week where Meiser Asturias was, like, he could have been on Mars for all I knew. He's alive. He's in Dunedin, playing in games. Switch hitting depth infielder on his way back. Jose Reyes taking batting practice, should be going out on a rehab assignment this week. Speaking of switch hitting infielders, he'll be coming back, you would think, by, I don't know, the end of next week, early next week at the latest, I would say, just with how his progress has gone.
Yeah, tough to pinpoint. I mean, yeah. I know he's obviously ramped up his baseball activities. I don't know how long they want to see him rehab for, but definitely he's on his way back to Toronto.
Michael Saunders is going to be taking 4 to 6 weeks off. We might be in a situation where he's going to be out to the All-Star break, which is what we thought originally. That is definitely unfortunate. Jose Bautista, while still in the lineup, is still, you know, some days unable to comb his hair, as he told us. But, you know, reports out yesterday were that he threw indoors. Nobody saw it happening, but he said it happened. And, you know, he said he wasn't terribly optimistic about how it felt. But, I mean, that's a step, whereas he wasn't throwing before. That's a step. But I mean, the Blue Jays offense has been fine.
Yeah.
This is all to say, like, yeah, this isn't the problem.
Yeah. It's really remarkable that they've been able to keep scoring, you know, with Saunders basically not being a factor.
Yeah.
With Reyes missing a big chunk of the season. Bautista's shoulder's been hurt, but since hurting his shoulder, I mean, it's kind of crazy, and it does justify it's their decision
better
to keep him going. But yeah,
he's been
971 OPS. I mean, he's hitting .294, .412 OBP. It's really good production, basically what you would hope for from Bautista. So that's a good sign for them. But one way or another, I mean, it's going to be a big relief for them when they get Jose Reyes back. Then you have Goins coming off the bench for you. You're able to mix and match. You just have that much more depth, and you're not relying on the Chris Colabellos to create the offensive production.
Do you have Goins when Asturias comes back, though?
I'd definitely rather have Ryan Goins on the team than Meiser Asturias if I'm the Blue Jays.
Wow.
Right?
That's a comment.
Well, I mean, what's the case for keeping Meiser over Goins?
Switch hitter. I mean, he's not anywhere near the defender that Goins is, but he can at least hit both, you know, from both sides of the plate and hit competently. I think he's a much better hitter.
But you don't need, what you need on this team isn't an everyday infielder, mm-hmm, in which case maybe I would say Meiser is Turris. But since you have Travis kind of establishing himself despite the struggles and him being a little banged up as well.
Yeah.
Travis has established himself. Reyes, when he returns, is the everyday guy. So what you need in that case is the bench player, And I think Goins' versatility, and I mean, the defense at short that he displays on a daily basis, that to me makes Ryan Goins the guy who's best suited to a bench role in this team.
The thing going for Goins, excuse that, is that he can play the outfield as well. And yeah. they're turning him into this kind of super utility guy who will play basically everywhere but catcher. And that so that helps to have on the bench. And I think he probably has a bit more speed than Meister. I think that the issue is he's not going to get on base like Meister as well.
Yep. And he has options, which always works against right. these guys. So there's a scenario for sure where Meister comes back and, okay, Ryan Goins, see you later. You're going to Buffalo because you have options and they don't want to try to slip Esturis or convince him to go to AAA. That wouldn't be an easy conversation to have. But I think if you're looking for the best combination of 25 players, you have Reyes at short, Travis at second. I think Goins is that extra guy you want backing up just because he does offer that defense and versatility.
Something we'll definitely have to give here because right now you got Steve Tolleson out of options on the roster, already went through the DFA process and came back on a different contract. Ezequiel Carrera is on this team and probably starting at this point, really, when you look at the
basically
garbage fire of an outfield that they have. Chris Colabello, who is, you know, cooled off a bit, but still has shown a pretty good plate approach, I've thought. Like, that's kind of been, everybody notices the hits, but I mean, I've noticed kind of the walks. I've noticed some of the at-bats that he's worked. Those have been good. There's a lot, like, you know, half the Buffalo Bisons are on this team right now.
Yeah.
So they, like, some things are, what as these players start coming back, and it seems like Reyes and Esturis are going to be the first two. I mean, who are we going to be saying goodbye to? You would think Ezequiel Carrera. Maybe that's what happens, actually. Maybe they send out Carrera and Goins starts as an outfielder.
Yeah, you never know. And Carrera has options, too. So there are different ways to do it. But, I don't know if Ryan Goins as a starting outfielder is that compelling of an option. Just because, you know, his biggest skill is his defense on the infield, to me. So I want to find ways to get him into the game as a defensive infielder. I'm not convinced that him as an outfielder is a difference maker.
What can you do with Reyes starting every day, though, right? I mean, Devin Travis is going to be starting every day at second base. You got to start Reyes every day. Jose Bautista is your designated hitter.
Right.
So Reyes has to start at shortstop. So, I mean, what can you do to get Ryan Goins on the defensive infield?
I mean, I think we've seen it this year. Reyes has been banged up at times. Yeah. They've said already they want to find ways to get him rest. Travis has been banged up at times, and they're going to have to find ways to keep him healthy and energized as well. So I think in those situations, you can mix Goins into the lineup.
Ryan Goins' first baseman, perhaps.
Who knows? Who knows where this is going?
But, you know, Edwin Encarnacion's going to need time off, too. That's kind of the thing with this, with the whole Jose Bautista thing. I mean, people get upset that Justin Smoke hasn't been getting at-bats. I don't really think that's that big of an issue. Justin Smoke is a Justin Smoke. Edwin Encarnacion playing every day on turf is an issue. The Blue Jays have 10 games in a row on turf right now. Him on that turf every day is an issue, I think, for a guy who already, if you watch him run, doesn't look quite right.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest cost in all likelihood of Bautista having to DH is the fact that you're putting this extra toll on Encarnacion. And I just think that it's never something that's going to show up instantly, but that's a wear and tear effect that can impact this team.
Another thing that would impact this team, and we'll leave off with this, and I guess that, like, I hate talking about this because it just gives it credence, like, it just gives it credibility even by bringing it up, but I it would be remiss if we didn't discuss this topic, the job status of one John Gibbons, and perhaps in a greater picture, the job status of Alex Anthopoulos. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre to me that people think that would fix anything. Firing Yep. John Gibbons would have any tangible effect on this team. Okay, fire John Gibbons tomorrow. What happens the day after that? Like, who are you going to bring in and hire? Somebody who has no familiarity with this team at all? Somebody who hasn't built up relationships with these players, understands their egos, understands, you know, their needs, and understands, like, how to get the best out of them? Somebody who hasn't learned that over the last 3 years? Well, I don't know if you'd really want to do that midseason. So what do? You promote DeMarlo Hale to manager? Okay, he's going to manage the bullpen and the lineup the exact same way that John Gibbons did. Like, it's going to be exactly the same because John Gibbons manages his bullpen and his bench very well. I'd think that most baseball people would manage it exactly the way John Gibbons has. So, DeMarlo Hale is already in that clubhouse. His voice is already there. So, what do you want to do? You want to bring in, like, a psychopath who's going to, like, go, right? That's what they want, more rah-rah or something. Like, That's the thing with people who say fire John Gibbons is like, okay, so there's step A. What's your step B? You don't have one.
Well, I guess to get to the point where you're contemplating these changes, and I think at this point it is a story. Alex Anthopoulos addressed it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It was in the Toronto Sun. Just the idea that these futures are not set in stone when it comes to John Gibbons and Pete Walker, the pitching coach. But to me, when you look at this team, what's wrong with this team? It's not who is pitching in the sixth inning and who is pitching in the seventh inning. When do you sacrifice bunt? When do you call for a hit and run? That's not what's wrong with this team. It's very apparent that the fact that the Blue Jays have the worst ERA in the American League is what's holding them back from the successes that they are searching for. So how do you fix that pitching staff? I don't know how you fix it. Maybe it's a personnel change. Maybe you end up going out and making a trade. But I'm not convinced that making a managerial change is in any way, shape, or form going to make these guys pitch better.
Absolutely not. It's like, I just don't get it. Like, what is this, like, pirate world that people live in where it's like, oh, we haven't seen land in 20 days. Throw the captain overboard.
Right.
That'll fix it. Like, what? Right. No, you're still lost at sea. Like, right. It's not, like, what world do you live in? Like, this is reality. That's not, like, throwing more kind of, like, uncertainty and unrest into that clubhouse right now is absolutely not what you want to do.
Right. But that being said, if these decisions can be, and we saw it in Miami, these decisions can be emotional decisions where someone at the ownership level says, I don't like what I'm seeing one bit. And, you know, they obviously won the other day, the losing streak ended. But, you know, when teams go on long stretches of losing and it gets ugly and fans grow impatient, ownership can sometimes just make an emotional decision. Doesn't mean it's the right one. But I think that's, especially on the heels of that losing streak and that ugly road trip, I think that's why the topic arose.
Yeah, well, any like Blue Jays fan who wants that should go be a fan of the Marlins. Because that's what you want, right? You got a lunatic in charge who's going to like throw his manager under, just throw him out the window and put his GM in charge with no managerial experience whatsoever. Go do that. You want reactionary moves? Like you want ridiculousness? Isn't Go be that, a fan of the Marlins.
Isn't that, and I wonder what your take on the Marlins situation is.
I think like, you just heard it.
Yeah, but isn't that like, I find it to be a very interesting experiment because I have no idea how Dan Jennings is going to do as their manager. Maybe he'll do well. There's some chance that he turns this team around. Or maybe it's a total, total disaster and he isn't up to game speed when it comes to making decisions and he, you know, stumbles when it comes to managing the media and the Marlins end up worse off than ever before. But I find it very interesting just to watch what's going to go on there as an observer of baseball and someone who kind of revels in these quirky, very off-the-wall decisions.
Based on just everything that's happened with that franchise, like over like the last 15 years, really? Like, why would you ever sign there? Why would you ever go work there for this lunatic? Like, why would you ever want a part of that? If I'm Giancarlo Stanton right now, I'm like, thank God for that opt-out clause.
Yeah, but he also got the most guaranteed money in baseball. And like Reyes and Burley did it. They're level-headed guys.
And where'd they end up a year later?
Right.
Toronto.
But they did it because the money, you know, and they didn't get the no trades. And so here they are. But I think at a certain point, money talks and opportunity too, because there are only 30 managerial jobs. There are only 30 GM jobs. They're always going to have qualified candidates for those positions.
I just think that even just as a person who is employed, I want to work somewhere where there is at least some stability.
Yep.
Like that's like the biggest argument with the Jays for me is I want stability. These people who want to fire Alex Anthopoulos after, you know, 5-6 years, as if that's even, you know, enough time to even see the results of the work that he's done.
Yep.
Wouldn't you want some stability in your front office, in the manager's seat? Like, wouldn't you want people who understand the challenges and needs of this franchise and of this market and who have learned on the job and gotten better? Like, anytime you drop somebody into a new market, a new job, a new place, it takes some time to learn it and to learn from their mistakes. And you look at Alex Anthopoulos, this guy who has clearly learned from his mistakes, clearly changed his philosophy, clearly changed what he does and how he operates this ball club. When you look at Osuna and Castro, guys who wouldn't have gotten a sniff of the major. Roberto Osuna has been the best pitcher on the Toronto Blue Jays this year, would not have sniffed the majors if it was the same circumstance and this is Alex Anthopoulos' second or third year.
He wouldn't have sniffed Buffalo.
No. Not at all.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who Alex Anthopoulos brought to the majors has been their best pitcher. Where is this bullpen without Roberto Osuna?
Yeah.
I
hear you. And
you know?
I think that, you know, as much as this is a very divisive topic, like you're making some very rational points here. And I think that sometimes what people do is they look at it from a very irrational standpoint, and they say, this team is over its last five. They only won 1 of 6 on this road trip. Something has to happen. Something has to happen. And I think that that mentality, like we saw in Miami, we saw it in Milwaukee too with firing Ron Renneke, but sometimes things just get to a point where the team is playing poorly. And at that point, that's when the discussion starts to boil up. And hey, we're a part of that to some extent by even having this conversation. The discussion starts to boil up. The fans start talking about it all the time. You know, it becomes that hot topic of the day. And then maybe someone gets impatient, pulls the trigger. But yeah, does pulling that trigger change the fate of the Toronto Blue Jays? You know, are the Red Sox all of a sudden a better pitching team because they fired Juan Nieves? I don't think so. I think Clay Buchholz still is who he is. I think that they're still going to have a lot of trouble getting Joe Kelly to command his fastball. But sometimes it just gets to that point of impatience where people are so incredibly thirsty for a change, even if it doesn't even mean it's going to be a change for the better.
If you want to say John Gibbons is the reason why this team has not pitched well, where were you last year saying John Gibbons was the reason why Mark Burley had like a 2.0 ERA through his first 12, 13 starts? If you're not going to hold, you know what I mean? If Mark Burley doing so well last year isn't evidence to you of John Gibbons' genius, then him doing so poorly this year can't be evidence to you of him needing to go. You can't, like, last year when the team was in first place, no one was, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
How do you balance those things?
But these
in
decisions,
your head, if you're making this argument, how do you do it?
Right. But they aren't rational though, right? Like managers, like you look at the Marlins, for example, there's no chance that you would say Marcell Ozuna, you know, isn't hitting that many home runs, or, you know, Matt Latos is off to a bad start. That's because of Redmond. Like I think that it's almost just I don't want to say a panic move, but it's such an emotional decision that isn't really grounded in the rational points that you're making there.
Speaking of irrational points, somebody who hears quite a few of those would be Mike Wilner, the host of Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He will join us next on At the Letters. It's At the Letters on Sportsnet.ca, also on iTunes on this Tuesday, May the 19th. We are joined, very, very happy to be joined by the host of Blue Jays Talk and valued member of the Sportsnet radio broadcast team, Mike Wilner. Mike, how are you?
I'm all right, boys. Thanks for the fine intro.
Oh, no worries. I would say that you probably interact with Blue Jays fans more than anyone else in the media, just because it is kind of your job to field their calls, field their questions. You interact on Twitter more so with the fan base. I'd like to ask you, what do you think the temperature is right now with this fan base?
I think that may depend on whether they win or lose tonight. but I do think it's not good. And I don't know, when you say temperature, I don't know if hot is good or bad. So I'm just going to say that I think right now that the fans are unhappy. They are restless. They want change. They're frustrated. They think that they've been sold a bill of goods again. And you know, they don't really need to care about the whys. They just see the results, and the results lately have been pretty terrible.
So there are a lot of callers that you get that are really on point and make their good points, but some others maybe have some misconceptions, or maybe they'll get things wrong here and there. What, you know, in talking to these callers every single day, what do you think are some of the misconceptions around this Blue Jays team?
I think some of the misconceptions are that they're not trying, that they're not good enough. I think people tend to forget that you're dealing with human beings and that there are peaks and valleys in performance. You know, there's one group of fans that I'll hear from that are more from that side, from the emotional side. You know, they need to be better motivated, or they need to want to win more, or the team lacks leadership, or some sort of, you know, those intangible things. When you can't figure out why something is going wrong, that's where you tend to go, the stuff that you can't measure and you can't see, that's the stuff that might be missing. But then on the other side, there are the, you know, the heavy-duty stat folk, the hardcore people who think that they're sabermetricians, but really they don't quite understand how to interpret data. They see, a little knowledge of something can be a really, really terrible thing. And so there are people who think they know what war is, and people who think they know how to look at new metrics, but don't, and completely misinterpret stuff. And so, you know, people call me up and say that Aaron Sanchez is a terrible pitcher because his FIP is this or his walk rate is that, and he's just getting incredibly lucky. Those sorts of things. Or people who say, well, this guy's not underperforming, look at his FIP. Well, but look at his ERA. So, you know, there are both schools. And, you know, there's also like the, I'm the immediate reaction. Let's not forget that. I'm the person that you call as soon as the game is over, while your emotions are running high. You guys have been down to enough games. You know the clubhouse doesn't open for a few minutes after the game ends. And sometimes guys will take half an hour, 45 minutes until they're composed enough to be ready to address the media. I'm the one who gets to talk to people in those 30 or 45 minutes while their emotions are still running very high after a win or a loss.
You mentioned ERA and FIP. ERA being a measure of what has happened, FIP being perhaps a measure of what would have happened if there was different fielding or different ballpark, if all things were neutral. Does it kind of become a chicken and egg scenario when you're, you know, you can have somebody call up and say, well, this is what has happened. Then you could say, yeah, but look at his FIP. You know, this might have been different if there's better defense there. Or if someone calls up and says, look at his FIP. You know, he's really good. And then you say, yeah, but he's been walking everybody and giving up runs.
Yeah, and for me, I think like stuff like FIP and any defense independent pitching stats and all of those things, I still think we have a ways to go. I don't personally believe that the only things a pitcher can control are who he walks, who he strikes out, and how many home runs he gives up. I think there is such a thing as weak contact, and I know that it's not consistently measurable start in and start out, but I do think, or outing, whatever, whether they're a starter or a reliever, but I do think that there are times when pitchers can induce weak contact. There are times when pitchers walk people and it's not their fault. And there are times when pitchers strike people out and it's not to their credit. It's either an umpire or a hitter striking himself out and stuff like that. So I think FIP, I think a lot of the defense independent pitching stats really eliminate too many factors. And yeah, you can say that this is what should have happened, but it's what should have happened in one universe, where in another universe, who knows what the heck would have happened. For me, I like things that actually tell the story and tell the story of what happened. And you can tell when you watch a game whether somebody got nickel and dime to death or whether he didn't. I mean, let's take Mark Burley, for example. He had two starts in a row where he combined to give up 13 runs on 24 hits over 10 innings and two starts. In the first start, he gave up, I think, 5 runs on 13 hits, and really he got, as it were, BABIPed to death. And there was almost no hard contact, ground balls were getting through, little loopers were dropping in, those sorts of things. Second time, he got his tail kicked in, and he was full measure for getting knocked all over the yard. So FIP will tell you that those two games were pretty much exactly the same because he didn't strike anybody out in either game to a huge extent. And yet those were two vastly, vastly different performances as far as I was concerned from Burley.
I'd kind of agree with you on this in that sometimes the stats can go a bit too far in eliminating the eye test, as it were, which is something that is still valuable and something that, especially when you talk to scouts and baseball people, they really, they watch the emotions of pitchers on the mound. They watch, is he looking into the dugout? You know, is he hyperventilating like Daniel Norris sometimes does? Is he screaming into his glove? Things like this. Sometimes you can go too far with the stats and kind of, eliminate what you see with your eyes, which still has value.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And I you know, it's sort of come off sounding like an old school, you know, we're looking at the good face and stuff like that, but I certainly wouldn't go that far. I think that there's a marriage to be made between both schools of thought, and, you know, I think that if you're one or the other, then, you know, if you're old school, turning your nose up at all these newfangled whatever, then I think you're just being silly and being afraid of change and afraid of allowing, you know, there are people, I was just in a conversation with a woman yesterday on Twitter who says, you always, it's about more than the stats. And I said to her, it's never about the stats. The stats are about what's happening, and they're what tells you the story. But, you know, and there are new school people who completely just turn their nose up at anything that's not new metrics and that's not war and that's not, you know, weighted on base average and all these things. They have no idea how to calculate these things. Most people, I would say the majority of people who talk about war don't even know what war measures and what it considers to be a win. So I think that, you know, like I said off the top, a little bit of knowledge can be a very frightening thing. And I think that's what we're dealing with a lot of the new school fans out there.
And you mentioned that on a day-to-day level, those reactions can really change a lot as far as, did the Blue Jays win? Did they win by a lot? Did they lose or lose in a really ugly fashion? Have you noticed at all, I mean, you've been doing this for quite a long time now, have you noticed at all a year-to-year progression or change at all in terms of the questions that you get and the tone that you get from fans as they keep on waiting for that next Blue Jays playoff team?
I think I think there are ebbs and flows. I think that, it's very, very difficult for me to remember. I think I'm like a closer in that aspect, where as soon as one game's done, it's forgotten and we move on to the next one, good or bad. It's very rare that I can actually remember, even once I get home, more than two or three calls, and sometimes none, you know, sometimes I've run into both of you guys just walking out of the booth after the show and been asked, so how was the show today? And I was like, I don't remember. And it's like 30 seconds after it's over. Maybe that's a defense mechanism. I don't know. But I remember, I wish I could remember some of the early, early days, like in 2002, 3, 4, those shows. Because at the time, and I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but at the time I was the only one in the market talking about trying to educate people on what on-base percentage was. And the early stuff that is now, we're talking about war and we're talking about runs created plus and all that stuff and defense independent stats. But I was trying to educate people on base percentage and it was like banging my head against the wall, trying to explain to people that pitching the one loss record of a pitcher is no way to measure a guy. And I remember when the Blue Jays signed AJ Burnett, and there was this hue and cry about how he was a 500 pitcher, and now with R.A. Dickey, he's a 500 pitcher, and, you know, that will get me, and I'll say, well, there's no such thing, what does that mean, and all that stuff. But that was what the early days were like. There was a lot of anger about J.P. Ricciardi towards the end of his tenure, probably from the middle towards the end. He didn't help himself at all. He came across as very dismissive, and he didn't like being challenged on anything by fans who he knew a lot less than he did about the inner workings and what was going on. So that, you know, there were a few years where I had JP on the show once a week, and he was usually on Wednesday, and from Thursday to Tuesday, everyone was calling up to talk about how terrible he was and how they got to get him out of here and how he's the worst thing to happen to the Blue Jays. And on Wednesday, it was all, oh, thank you for coming on. It's so great to talk to you, and all of that stuff. But I think that, you know, as we've gone farther and farther away from a playoff spot, and the baseball has started to get, the fan base has started to get younger again, I'm now talking to people who've never seen this team make the playoffs, and or at least were too young to remember when they did make the playoffs, and the frustration builds with every year, and it doesn't help, to be honest, that what goes on with the Leafs, the longer the Maple Leafs go teasing people with good starts and then not making the playoffs, the worse it is for Blue Jays fans too, who now tend to believe, you know, I hear so often from people, oh, the Blue Jays tease us every year. And I'm thinking, well, no, they've had two good starts in the last 7 years, right, where you thought something might be happening, and they wind up falling apart at the end. So it hasn't been like that at all, but I think people are just getting tired of it. They're getting tired of the losing. They're getting tired of not being in a race. I mean, the Jays haven't been in a pennant race in the last 2 weeks of September since I took this job, and they've only been in a pennant race in the last 2 weeks going into September once, and that was last year. And there have been so many promising seasons. I think with each one that goes by, people get a little angrier, a little more frustrated, and a little less patient. And social media has kind of added fuel to that fire as well.
And that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because as much as you interact with people on Twitter and you interact with people over the air, you get approached by people at the ballpark, and I'm sure just going about your daily life as well, and people want to talk to you about the Blue Jays and ask what's going on.
I'm not that big a deal, Ben.
I've seen you get recognized. I have seen it happen on many occasions. And so do those interactions vary, you know, when you're talking on the phone compared to an in-person conversation?
Oh, yeah. In person, everyone's wonderful.
Right.
You know, in person, it's, oh, I can't believe how you deal with that. You're so patient, and it's hilarious to listen to you interact with all these people on the show. You know, on social media, it's not. People are a lot braver when they know you don't know who they are. It's the same sort of thing that happened with JP, right? When he's not around, it's all hate, hate, hate. And when he is, everybody shrivels up and talks about how wonderful he is. I would say it's a relatively even split. I think more people that I interact with on Twitter are engaging and bright and positive and realistic than the few who are the loudest and often the meanest, but I've blocked a lot of those anyway.
Yeah,
Jeff Blair taught me how to do that.
You got to mute, Will. That's what you got to do. Mute.
No, see it, but then they you don't know that they muted you. Actually, I did mute one guy just the last couple of days. And he is someone who, you know, Ben was talking about how day-to-day the interaction changes depending on the Blue Jays' fortunes. This guy was sort of inning-to-inning, rally-to-rally. And I would get multiple tweets from him that, you know, if the Blue Jays were losing, would say, fire Gibby. And if the Blue Jays scored a couple of runs, he was talking about how great everything was and how wonderful the team is. I just couldn't handle it anymore. So you know, he wasn't rude or mean or anything, so I didn't want to block him, but I definitely did mute that guy.
Well, yeah, with the block, you take away their ability to enjoy your brand, right?
Yeah,
to enjoy
which is fine with me. They've lost that right.
Is it a right or a privilege?
That's true. They've lost that privilege.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, okay, speaking of Twitter, and I mean, I think that something that Twitter has done for the world, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, likely a bad thing, is it's just made analysis and it's made reaction just that much more immediate and quick, and a lot less thought goes into it, I would say, because it's just got to happen like that, like right away. I have to have a feeling on this that goes out to everyone in my life right now. Do you think that kind of the rise of Twitter and maybe social media in general has changed the tone a bit of fan reaction? Or do you think it's just since 2003 mostly been the same?
I wonder. I don't know. I mean, maybe it changes the tone of those who are on Twitter. But you're right. People feel like they have to react to things immediately. And I think, I don't know that it's increased. I think there's just, they have more of a voice. You know, there's a population of people who need to be outraged about things. And I don't know if they look for things about which to be outraged or if they just find things and become outraged about them. But there didn't used to be as much outrage in the world, I don't think, 10 years ago, you know, before the advent of these sorts of social media. And now it's all over the place. Then again, maybe there was. I'm trying to think of a polite way to phrase this. But some stand-up comic, and I don't remember who, said something like, every village has always had an idiot.
Right.
But Twitter allows them all to get together in the same place. and you know, I don't mean to disparage the people on Twitter, and I'm certainly not saying everyone's an idiot, but, I mean, no matter what you're feeling, what you're outraged about, you'll find someone, and probably hundreds of someones, on social media who will agree with you, and hundreds more who will argue with you, and you'll become more and more firmly entrenched in your position. The one thing that I find really frustrating, and I know it's one thing that a lot of people find very frustrating about me, is that when someone is, when someone presents an argument to me, that is just, I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but your opinion should be based on some sort of truth. And when the basis of someone's argument, when their thesis statement is factually incorrect, I will point that out, but that doesn't seem to matter. And that's what becomes so frustrating, is that, look, I understand you feel this way, but this is what you're incorrect about, and that's probably why you shouldn't be feeling this strongly this way, but that's completely disregarded. And I'm not specifically only talking about my show. I mean, it goes into politics in the United States, and it's getting there in Canada, which kind of sucks. But the whole Bill O'Reilly thing is all about people being so firmly entrenched in beliefs that are so completely incorrect that can be proven easily by facts. But so many people don't like to let facts get in the way of their arguments.
I think that maybe what's been lost is nuance and the fact that, you know, there can be actually two ways to look at something that aren't...
No, come on, there aren't.
Not in the 140 characters.
My way, and that's it. But you're 100% correct. Like, every story has three sides, mine, right, yours, and the truth.
Right.
And nobody's willing to see those other two sides anymore.
You mentioned that you're aware that people get frustrated with you doing that on Twitter. Is there a temptation to frustrate them even more so by doing it more?
No, I mean, it takes a lot out of me too.
Yeah. Does it?
And often I'm not sure quite why I do it, but I just want to make them understand. And at some point, you just have to say, "All right, this person is not going to understand," and you just give up. And it's easier if they're pleasant about it. It's tougher if they're insulting and rude, but that just kind of gets you to block them a little bit more easily. But even this debate with this woman yesterday, I mean, she had said, I wrote what Ben said, at least, was a lovely piece about
exactly.
The Blue Jays' Victoria Day win over the Angels.
On Sportsnet.ca.
On Sportsnet.ca, mm-hmm. In fact. Because none of you guys bothered to show up for the game. So I got a tweet last night from a fan who said, "Reggie's story was lovely, but you omitted the fact that the game was won purely on emotion."
And she's talking about the Donaldson thing?
The Josh Donaldson argument with Mike Butcher, and she mentioned Kevin Pillar getting that thrown out stealing, the call that should have been reversed but wasn't. And I said, well, no, I didn't omit that fact because it's not a fact. You know, that's not why they won the game. They won because they scored 10 runs. Emotion doesn't help you score runs. And she was very firm. And she even used the word obviously. Obviously what happened between Donaldson and Butcher got that four-run rally going, and I just couldn't make her understand that really, you know, it didn't, because it is an intangible thing. And it's, you know, there are people who firmly believe 1,000% that the reason that Russ Martin got the two-run single to give the Blue Jays the lead for good and Danny Valencia followed with a two-run double was because Josh Donaldson got in an argument with Mike Butcher, the Angels pitching coach, and it got everybody's emotions going. And it would be wonderful to live in that world where that kind of thing can motivate a baseball team to win a ball game. But the truth of the matter is, if emotions mattered that much, nobody would ever lose a playoff game.
Yeah.
Ever. Neither team would ever lose a playoff game because their emotions and their motivations are so high to win that, you know, they'd be scoring 30 runs an inning or whatever until time immemorial. And people remember, hey, I remember when Jose Bautista got brushed back by Darren O'Day and then he hit a home run. I remember when Jose Bautista got brushed back by Ivan Nova and then he hit a home run. They don't remember all the times where something happened to set something off and emotions ran high and then they didn't succeed. And I talk about confirmation bias a lot on Blue Jays Talk, and that's exactly what that is. You remember the things that you want to remember and you forget about things that don't match up with the narrative that's in your head.
Well, I was just going to make that point, that if Russell Martin doesn't hit that single, or if the Blue Jays blow the lead in the ninth or something like that, that Donaldson moment isn't remembered.
Right.
And it's only remembered, really, because Sportsnet had a camera on him. Like, these interactions happen throughout a game quite frequently. You just don't always see them on TV.
Maybe not to that extent where the umpire has to step in and settle things down. But yeah, those little things do happen all the time. These little motivational moments happen. And there are players that feel like they need to do it to get going, but you know, there's no real proof that helps one way or the other. And again, if it did, both teams want to win every game. That's the way it works. And so, you know, if those things really, really mattered, then we would see we would see every team winning every game it played, and that's not possible.
Yeah, and if Josh Tolley could just get emotional and hit home runs, then I'm sure he'd do it. But there's a talent question in place.
Yes, there's a huge talent question in play as well. And there are still some people, I mean, people who should know better, who honestly believe that if Ichiro Suzuki wanted, he could have hit a home run every time he came to the plate, but instead he preferred to hit singles and build his batting average and hit .340. I still hear stuff like that.
On Blue Jays Talk?
No, not on Blue Jays.
I haven't heard that.
That's just the biggest example, the whole Ichiro could hit a home. He could be a home run hitter if he wanted. He chooses not to be.
Yeah.
And we can get into the whole home runs kill rally discussion, but I don't know if any of us want to do that.
Ben doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Mike, we thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, boys. This was good, solid discourse. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. Have a good one. Our profound thanks to Mike Wilner for joining us for the first of what I'm sure will not be the last time that he appears on At the Letters. Kind of an interesting, different perspective from the host of Jays Talk.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to hear what goes into it. And I also find it kind of interesting that he has the mindset of a closer, you know, and kind of instantly after the call, it's like, that's done. On to the next one. And to the point where he's not dwelling on it when he goes home after the game.
Got to have a short memory in this business.
Yeah.
There's no good segue for it. Jeff Hoffman is going to be the greatest pitcher there ever was for the Blue Jays, probably.
Well, I don't know about that. But hey, he's pitching in a pro game for the first time, and that'll be coming up tomorrow if you're listening on Tuesday. He's pitching Wednesday, and it'll be a big chance for the Blue Jays to see what they have in him. Alex Anthopoulos is going to be at the game, and there's no question in my mind that if Hoffman really impresses, he's going to be on the radar of this big league team down the stretch in August and September.
It's funny, the amount of talk around him, and as I was stalling for time there, I pulled up his baseball reference page, and it's just empty. It's just his bio, right?
Yep.
And just his prospect ranking, because he has not pitched professionally in his life. Do we need to kind of manage expectations here for a guy coming off Tommy John surgery who's never faced this level of competition?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at Carlos Rodon, for example, another very advanced college pitcher who was drafted last year, up in the big leagues right now, but he's struggling with command. This is a guy who was as polished as they come, and you know it takes an adjustment period. So even if he does get to the big league level this year, don't make any assumptions. Not everyone makes that transition as easily as a Roberto Osuna does. I mean, those guys are the exception.
I will say that I spoke to a scout when I was in Baltimore last week with the team, and he was like blown away with what he's done post-surgery. Like Jeff Hoffman is, like if you believe the line that we're being told, has apparently had like one of the better recoveries from a Tommy John surgery than anyone's ever seen. Like his first time back on the mound, he was like, it was coming out at 99. And people were just like amazed by the velocity and the life that he's had post Tommy John. I mean, this is a real prospect and a guy that a lot of people think would go first overall in the draft this year if he were in it. People that a lot of people think should have gone first overall in last year's draft.
People including Jeff Hoffman. I mean, if you watch the documentary, the feature by Jamie Campbell on Sportsnet, he talked to Hoffman and said, hey, do you think that you know, you were the best pitcher in that draft? And Hoffman, he's never been shy about this kind of thing. He says, you know what, I think I'm as talented as it gets. And you like to see that in a young pitcher, someone who has a lot of confidence. And he's going to have his stumbling blocks like anyone, but we get to start watching that process starting this week.
And yeah, I do think that him starting at Dunedin instead of Lansing, instead of Vancouver, kind of says something. It's a bit of an indication about the Blue Jays' intents.
They like him.
We lack them, as Gibby would say. All right, we've gone on for far too long. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I'm Arden Zwelling on Twitter at Arden Zwelling. That's Ben Nicholson Smith on Twitter at B Nicholson Smith. Our producer, as always, is the great and loyal Sam Alton McKee on Twitter, Sam_Alton_McKee. Thanks so much for coming along with us. We'll see you next week on At the Letters.